Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
All right, that's my cue. I remember from last week. Hope you had a great weekend, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. This hour, we're going to be joined by Lucas Tomlinson. Bring us inside the Pentagon. You heard about what happened. Evidently, we've been hacked, or somebody in the inside just decides to release secure, top-secret communications and intelligence in from our Pentagon to the rest of the world. Like, for example, how we're able to listen in on the Russians. How, for example, how about the details of the Ukrainian surge this spring? How about our view on Israel? How about communications with the other allies? Disastrous, like 10 years ago with Snowden, correct? Well, it happened, and they didn't figure it out until Wednesday, and it's been going on since January. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Are you saying that you would be taking part in our upcoming election in 2024?
Well, I'll either be rolling an egg or, you know, being the guy who's pushing them out.
Come on, help a brother out. Make some news for me.
I plan on running out, but we're not prepared to announce it yet.
All right, all things politics in 2024. That's Joe Biden just slurring his words as usual. What's to be alarmed about? As the 2024 big names are beginning to show their game plans, how Trump's legal battles motivate his base and repels independents, while Joe's invisible reelection campaign plans to use TikTok to make up for his lack of energy enthusiasm.
Number two. I believe that the Biden administration should ignore this ruling, and what they are currently doing is engaged in an unprecedented and dramatic erosion of the legitimacy of the courts.
Here we go again. A ruling in Texas bans the abortion pill, and an opposing ruling in Washington state leads us all to the Supreme Court. For pro-life Republicans, it represents pure political peril. We'll talk about it.
Number one.
The Chinese military exercises these couple of days have been very serious. Ships that come in very close to Taiwan, and any accident might spark an uncontrollable war in between Taiwan and China.
Spineless France, the latest country to not back Taiwan, and now the dollar is currency as our currency after a trip to China, who is conducting its most intense drills to date to intimidate us and the island nation of Taiwan. But where is our president going? Ireland. We're going to look at the best course for the U.S. And a special thanks to WWNR, 620 a.m. in Beckley, West Virginia. News Talk 620, 101.1 FM. Thank you for joining the family of affiliates. It continues to grow. We're privileged to be in West Virginia. And I hope you're going to love the show. Bottom of the hour, Jonathan Turley will talk about the lawlessness that's taking place in Tennessee. So what's going on? You know, we always talk about Taiwan and Jared. What's different? How about this? The Chinese over the weekend, Saturday specifically, 11 warships belonging to China's Navy, formerly the People's Liberation Army Navy, and 70 PLA aircraft were detected traveling near Taiwan. 35 of them detected aircraft had crossed the median line of Taiwan Straits and entered Taiwan's self-declared air defense identification zone. They're trying to then put out an animation showing what an attack on Taiwan would look like. What do? 3 years ago, they ordered and paid for a weapon system for arms to fight. We have not delivered it. Now, they have not trained like they should, and we are putting trainers in there. We see what our training does. Look at Ukraine. We train most of those fighters, so we know that could happen. But we want to get them to fight for themselves and make it so formidable for China that they'll think to themselves it's not going to be worth it. We'll have a situation like Russia has in Ukraine, but we don't seem to be doing that. And making things worse, in my view, and stunningly, in my view, and I'm mad at myself for thinking that France would be a loyal ally, we have Macron go over there and basically say, we're not really going to get involved here. They make remarks after a visit to China. They have a plane load of their business people that go in and make deals in China, which everything we should be decoupling from, so should the West. Remember, they have a genocide going on with the Uyghurs. Remember what they're doing with the Belt and Road Program. See what they're doing with our currency. See how they'll foam, what they did to Hong Kong. See what they did to the world with the pandemic. So Emmanuel Macron says this. The question asked of us Europeans is the following. Is it in our interest for there to be an acceleration on the topic of Taiwan? No. The worst thing we Europeans can do would be to be followers on this topic and to adapt to the American rhythm and a Chinese overreaction. Why should we go at a rhythm chosen by somebody else? Europe didn't build the strategic autonomy for a long time, but now the ideological battle has been won. 5 years ago, the strategic autonomy was a pipe dream. Now everyone is talking about it. There you go. Congratulations, China. You don't have an enemy, and America doesn't have a true ally in France. But if they feel as though Europe's going to be invaded, they want us to help out, right? So you think world's going to be a better place if we let China get overrun? Don't think so. Michael McCall, who's over there, said this about his frustration about Taiwan arming itself, cut six.
Do you think we are prepared were this to happen in the next 5 years?
You know, I sign off on all foreign military weapon sales. I can tell you we have a problem with our defense industrial base. These weapons I've signed off on to Taiwan, 22 weapon sales, I signed off 3 years ago, and they've yet to go into country.
Think about that. 3 years ago, they paid for it. That's a profit. They're not looking for a bargain basement deal. They want to pay for it. They want the most sophisticated systems. They're a sophisticated, thriving democracy. Here's Lindsey Graham. He says this whole strategic ambiguity, not effective. Let's change it. Cut 11.
I think they're setting the stage possibly for a blockade of Taiwan, that the Communist Chinese Party is going to test us dramatically this year and next year before the election. So in 1961, the Russians tried to isolate West Berlin. So I'm fearful that the Chinese may be setting conditions to blockade Taiwan in the coming months or weeks, and we need to respond forcefully. If they do that, we need to blockade oil shipments coming from the Mideast to China and let them know if you blockade Taiwan, we're going to cut off your oil. We need to train more aggressively Taiwanese forces so they can fight like the Ukrainians. We need to put nuclear-tipped missiles back in our submarines. Biden won't do it. The military has asked for nuclear-tipped cruise missiles to be put back in submarines like the Russians did. And we need more forces in the region. I think if you do those things, you could deter a blockade.
Wow, he's thought it through as usual. So what do you think about that? A lot of people are going to go, oh, why do we want a world war? Leave it alone. You understand the only way to prevent a world war is to be ready to fight it everywhere possible. And people say this is just not going to work for us. That's pretty much a given. But we have a president that can't even do an Easter egg roll correctly, who's going to go to Ireland where the order of the IRA is beginning to reemerge. Believe it or not, there's some type of terror attack plan where there's no problem in Ireland. This guy's got to be on the phone with Macron. What are you thinking? And before he went there, just to let you know, we got a huge problem with China. The last thing you got to do is acquiesce anywhere. Don't show weakness any place. Remember, they're thinking about putting weapons into Ukraine. You know how disastrous that would be. So let's move on and talk about 2024. And then I want to give Lucas Tomlinson a chance to update what's going on shortly. But on 2024, just getting really intriguing. It looks like the president of the United States is going to wait to the fall, at which time he's going to be going heavily with TikTok. Now, think about this. Most Democrats and Republicans outside Rand Paul believe that TikTok is a threat. Why? Because TikTok has a news feed that will go heavily towards China. That they say 100 million Americans or 150 million Americans are on TikTok. They say it's an addicting app that will be able to get all information from you in order to sign up for it, from the facial recognition on down. So it is a threat to America. Not only is the president not thinking about banning it like he should, but he's going to use it to his advantage to try and win the next election by using influencers on TikTok to get across his point. Now, what do they TikTok have? Young users. Got it. You use your social media, like the president, former president used Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. Go ahead. Got it. But why TikTok? Go ahead. If you want to do social media, the guy's 80 years old, doesn't want to travel, go ahead. But if you use TikTok, you are hurting American security. How could you want to be president of the United States, not recognize that China is our enemy economically and militarily, and use the one social media app that would make us subservient to them? To me, it's insane. We'll talk about Ron DeSantis. We'll talk about Gavin Newsom, talk about the president of the United States, the after effects of the court cases and what everyone has to say. It was a real busy weekend in between. I know Easter celebration, got it, between watching the Masters, understand it. I understand what's going on, but there was a lot going on in the world. It has not slowed down. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show back in a moment with a very important guest, Lucas Tomlinson.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
New from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Dana Perino. Join me for season 3 of my limited time podcast, Everything Will Be Okay, based on my best-selling book of the same name. Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts and leave a rating and review.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
If the United States decides to intervene in a war in between Taiwan and China, it'll be highly welcomed. But we need to make it very clear, defending Taiwan is our own responsibility, and we have the determination to defend ourselves.
Well, I love it. That's Taiwan's foreign minister, and I love that attitude. That's the same thing Ukraine had. They just want to fight. They want to live their lives and want to fight for their own welfare. They don't want to be bailed out. They also don't want to start a world war. But it's extremely important for us to have a plan to make sure, and I love this term, Taiwan's a porcupine. You just can't get a hold of it. You can't win. It's not going to be worth it. And they're an ally, a democracy in a region that Japan and South Korea and Australia we're kind of hoping they'd have an ally. And believe it or not, Vietnam would be actually on our side. Lucas Tomlinson joined us now. He covers the Pentagon. Hey, Lucas, what's the mood there as we watch those exercises take place?
Well, Brian, it's always great to join you. Hope you had a happy Easter. Some officials want to see Taiwan spend more on their defense. Large backlog in Congress, you know, billions of dollars of weapons that have been, you know, approved to ship to Taiwan. We just heard that from Chairman McCall in that great interview with Aisha Hosni over the weekend in Taiwan. Taiwan right now, Brian, only spends 2.4% of its GDP on defense. So there are some officials that want to see Taiwan get moving. Now, in terms of those exercises over the weekend, they're pretty massive. Over 70 aircraft, back-to-back days, you know, fighter jets, bombers, reconnaissance aircraft, really simulating a full-scale attack on Taiwan, which, of course, would be devastating.
Well, so we'll see where this goes. It seems like both sides have different takes on what is taking so long to deliver the weapons they ordered 3 years ago. And I think it's a cop-out to say supply chain. When someone writes the check and asks for weapons 3 years, could there be an intentional slowdown because you don't want to be provocative to China?
Well, if you talk to some of the China hawks like Elbridge Colby, who wrote the National Defense Strategy during the Trump administration under Mattis, he thinks there's trade-offs between U.S. support to Ukraine and Taiwan. He says you can't do both, and a lot of that does have to do with not just the supply chain, but just the United States just doesn't build like it used to. The fact, Brian, that it's going to take years to build up Abrams tanks and HIMARS, that's longer than it took to build the Empire State Building, Brian. The U.S. just does not manufacture things like they used to. You know, look at warships. China now has the largest navy in the world. The U.S. is struggling to catch up. Why? It has so few shipyards right now. The navy is cutting ships. They're not building as much as some people want to see. But just to give listeners an idea of what a potential war with China would look like. In the early days of the Iraq War, shock and awe, we remember those cruise missile strikes. We're talking about 90 strikes a day. Officials tell me, Brian, that a war with China, you're looking at 1,000 targets a day. Right now, about 90% of China's missiles are in are land-based intermediate cruise missiles, short-range ballistic missiles. Some of those missiles were previously banned because the INF treaty that the U.S. was held captive to, that the Trump administration got the U.S. out of. People want to see the U.S. deploy similar missiles to that first island chain. We're talking Taiwan, Japan, Philippines, perhaps, that first island chain around China, much in the same way that Ronald Reagan 40 years ago deployed the Pershing 2s and nuclear-tipped Tomahawk cruise missiles to Western Europe. You know, people freaked out at the time, but those missiles, about 500 in all, missile defense experts say it was like holding a gun to Gorbachev's head. Why 2-minute flight time to Moscow? Right now, officials say, believe it or not, Brian, U.S. aircraft carriers aren't even a player in a war with China. Why? DF-26 carrier killer missiles, that U.S. aircraft carriers would have to be so far away from China they wouldn't factor in. You can't have those in missile range. Not to, you know, digress too much, but just to show you the scale, what we're talking about in any potential conflict. And, of course, you have to talk about French President Emmanuel Macron's visit to China that just wrapped up. He's getting eviscerated for some of the comments he made.
He should be.
That France wants no part of a potential conflict, that Europe can't even handle Ukraine. What does that send? What kind of message does that send the Chinese? Makes it more look like more possibilities of a potential Ukraine. By the way, President Xi himself said he wants his forces ready to invade Taiwan in just 4 years from now. And of course, you remember that leaked memo from that Air Force Transcom general, the head of the Transportation Command, said U.S. should be ready for war with China potentially as early as in 2 years from now, 2025.
So let's talk about the Pentagon leak. What are we to make of this? It seems that pictures, photographs, war plans, assessments, communications have been leaking out since January. Now in their Telegram and various sites, I don't know if there's an new Edward Snowden out there leaking these private documents. We know some of them have been altered by the Russians, it seems, but there's a lot that look authentic. What could you tell us? When did the Pentagon actually discover that they're being, for lack of a better term, hacked?
Well, Brian, of course, this is large, so embarrassing for the Pentagon. Anytime you have your secrets world to see, it's highly embarrassing. Now been referred to the Justice Department, and people are scrambling. And much like Snowden, it seems like it's this drip, drip, drip. Every day we're seeing more and more stuff appear online. You know, these is the old Latin phrase quia bono comes up as this. Who is the recipient? And it's easy to say the Russians. However, it also shows how much U.S. intelligence has penetrated the Russians' apparatus. So that's highly embarrassing for the Russians. At the same time, it's also laying bare how desperate the situation is. Ukraine. We've been reporting about ammunition the U.S. itself is struggling to manufacture. Reading these critical shortages in ammunition, you know, some artillery units there in the east being able to only fire one or two rounds a day in what is largely really an artillery war, and also just conclusively saying this war has ground to a stalemate right now. The Russians are not
winning.
Well,
we got a surge about to happen, and details of the surge and what it's going to look like by the Ukrainians is now out there. Final thought, Lucas?
They need to get to the bottom of this, but right now that surge, it does not appear that they have enough ammunition, and are there even enough tanks? Remember when President Biden, to great fanfare in late January, said tanks are going to roll in, the Abrams are going to go in, and then we found out it would take months, maybe years to get them there. How many of those German-made Leopard tanks have appeared in Ukraine? Right now it does not feel that offensive, the spring offensive that's been talked about, is ready.
Lucas Tomlinson from the Pentagon. Thanks so much, Lucas. Appreciate it.
You bet, Brian.
All right, got some challenges. When we come back, talk about challenges. What about legal challenges for the former president of the United States? We'll talk about that. And what about the storming of the Capitol in Tennessee? How the press has that story wrong. No joke. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Download Fox News Channel's The 5 podcast for free. 5 of your favorite Fox News personalities discuss current issues in a roundtable discussion. Get it now on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I believe that the Biden administration should ignore this ruling. I think that we, the courts have the legitimacy and they rely on the legitimacy of their rulings. And what they are currently doing is engaged in an unprecedented and dramatic erosion of the legitimacy of the courts.
Okay, so when the court in Texas decides to ban the abortion bill, they in Washington State says, no, we're going to reinstate it. So rather than say to yourself, you might be upset by that ruling, an interesting tack by AOC would be to start ignoring the court rulings. How does that fly with Jonathan Turley, George Washington University professor, Fox News contributor? Jonathan, do you think that AOC is onto something, ignoring court rulings?
Well, she's onto something, but it's not something that's particularly good. This is a member of Congress that previously said that she doesn't know why we need a Supreme Court and said that it doesn't have any real benefits to the country. So you have to take those comments with a grain of great skepticism. But, what she's referring to is that sometimes the government will not follow a ruling in the sense of applying it outside the parties in the case. She's dramatically misrepresenting that doctrine. She's not the first. But I think that what's telling is that this is part of a movement to challenge institutions or results that simply don't result in the way you want them to come out. And, I wrote a column this weekend in The Hill talking about how many on the left are lionizing these legislators in Tennessee and saying, in Vice President Harris's view, it was an assault on democracy to expel them. I didn't support the expulsion of those members. But the assault on democracy is when you stop democracy, right? The assault is when you take a bullhorn to the floor of a legislative body and prevent them from legislating. And yet you have the Vice President of the United States heralding these people and saying, well, it depends on whose voices are trying to be heard. Well, that's, I think, really telling. It's the same thing with AOC. It's not the means you use. It's what you consider to be the right result.
Yeah. So these guys, the protesters want gun control and want some type of gun legislation to ban assault, whatever they want. So these two lawmakers decide to join in, grab bullhorns, and the chance of expletives, which are listed in your editorial today or your column today, you just talk about what AOC put out with these horrible phrases said on the chamber floor. And then these guys take over. They're uncontrollable. And they said to themselves, wait a second, we can't control this crowd and we can't control our people in our own body. So they took three of them. They voted on whether they should be expelled or not. Two of them get voted out. The other one pleaded her case and said, I never used a bullhorn. I was just kind of sitting here. And then when asked, she says, the only reason I wasn't thrown out is because I'm white, a white woman. And those other two were tossed out because they're black. And then now people are saying, well, this is Jim Crow all over again.
No, it's really that last point I talked about in my column, an earlier column, because it's really otherworldly. I mean, she literally argued to her colleagues that I'm different from my other two colleagues because I didn't use a bullhorn. And her lawyer argued that she separated herself from the mob as opposed to her two colleagues. That changed a single vote. And that made the difference why she wasn't expelled. And then she literally walked off the floor and said, they're racist. They expelled the two black legislators, but not me. It really exposes how this has become an almost propagandized, environment where there's no sense of sort of necessity to be honest and to be civil. You just toss it aside. And many of us were just shocked. I mean, she literally, a few minutes after effectively arguing that she was different from her two colleagues, went outside the floor and then denounced the people that had decided not to expel her as racist.
Unbelievable. And let's go back to the abortion pill, for example. What did the judge actually rule on the abortion pill?
Well, this is a very significant debate that's going on. I disagree with it in the sense of being able to stop the abortion bill. When the abortion bill was approved, that was many, many years ago. And part of the argument is that they failed to properly review all of the medical dangers and inherent risks. The medical profession overwhelmingly insists that this is safe. But I disagree with this effort. I think it comes too late to do this. You can do this in Congress. You can try to get Congress if you feel that there is a substantial question here. But we have a division among the courts, and that will inevitably go to the Supreme Court. And they can move relatively quickly, and I expect that they might. You know, if you have courts that are in direct contradiction, the court can expedite this type of ruling. This would be the classic case for expedition because it affects a lot of women, it affects a lot of states. So we might see that.
So what exactly – the FDA says it's not safe. We know it's safe. I mean, you might not agree with what its function is, but we know it's safe, correct?
Right, yes.
So in Washington, they say it's safe. And in Texas, they said, no, we're not going to do it. So then the Supreme Court, does the Dobbs decision figure into anything with this?
Well, this is sort of the second generation of Dobbs. You know, what the court said is we're going to leave this up to states. But now states are reaching different conclusions. And some do not want this pill to be made available. The fact is that over half of the abortions in the country are not done in clinics. They're done through medication abortions. And so many legislators are saying, well, this is a circumvention because we don't want abortion in our state. But this is sort of a end run because it's not really arguing that point. It's really challenging the basis for making it available. I think it's ultimately a loser, including in front of the Supreme Court. Putting aside all these factual questions when this happened, this also affects interstate commerce. You know, so this affects the ability to get this type of medication as it crosses state lines. And I think that may also bother some of the justices.
Yeah, I think so. Let's talk about Trump if we can. I thought it was very interesting, Jim Trustee, over the weekend. The only person that probably would have done better is you in terms of taking on the case that was being put at them from Chuck Todd to Jonathan Carl. Here's a little of the exchange on Meet the Press about the documents case, which some people think the president's vulnerable for. Listen, cut 38.
Where in the law does he have a right to these classified documents? Presidential Record Act is clear. There's no vagary here.
No, well, you're right, but I think you're misinterpreting the Presidential Records Act. You notice he didn't say, I did this, I possessed it. He said, I would have the right. He's correct. Under the Presidential Records Act, which is a non-criminal statute, that's the key. DOJ and political bureaucrats at NARA criminalize something using criminal tools, grand jury subpoenas, search warrants, for a statute that says, look, ex-presidents work with NARA, work with them for years, figure out what stuff they get. It took 18 years, I think, for Nixon's tapes to finally get to NARA. So there's a delay built into the process as they negotiate in good faith. In this case, NARA was hypersensitive, immediately trying to pounce on President Trump to say he's holding on to things he's not entitled to. But the remedy for all of that, if you have that fight between the archivist and the former president, is civil litigation.
Okay.
And they jumped right past that with a very happy and willing DOJ.
Your thoughts on this exchange?
Well, I thought he did an excellent job. All those points are perfectly valid. I think the danger that's facing him, and he is a very good attorney to have in this spot, is the obstruction element. There is some question as to why this escalated so quickly into a criminal matter because it involves Trump. I think there's legitimate questions there. The problem is that the FBI, from the very beginning, seems to me more focused on obstruction than possession. And that also involves the Biden cases. The FBI didn't act in any of these cases like they viewed them as criminal matters at the outset. It looked like they viewed these as collection matters because just the way that they proceeded, you know, working with them, saying turn over the documents, put extra locks on. But in the earliest filings, the Department of Justice said they believe that they have evidence of obstruction. And that is serious. That is the – I don't really give a lot of credence to the Georgia case unless they have new evidence. I think the Manhattan case is pure political prosecution. I think January 6th does not have a viable criminal case against Trump. It is Mar-a-Lago and obstruction. That's the one Trump needs to worry about. So, the Department of Justice litigates obstruction all the time. It's one of their favorite bases for prosecution.
Right, and we'll see. I thought I could hold on to it. You said I could take it. We're negotiating it. You raid my house. It looks like, on a side note, it looks like by communications, the FBI did not want to do this. The DOJ basically told them to do it. The FBI didn't initiate this action, for whatever that means for people listening. Now, what Trustee brought up is interesting. So you think that Trump obstructed. All right, go ahead. Go at it. The other investigation that has no leaks might be obstruction, too, in that they didn't know about the Penn Biden Center had classified documents. They don't know if the University of Delaware classified documents. If you have classified documents in your papers for 15 years and it's discovered by somebody else, did you obstruct? Did you? Well, you could go look if you want. But how do you even know where to look? We know exactly where to look with Trump. But then they went to his lawyer's office. They went to Delaware. They went to his two homes and they went to the Ben Biden Center. They seem to have found something everywhere. So are you obstructing by not being transparent when you left with those documents? You had to have lied, according to people that know, when they say, do you have any documents that you're leaving with when you leave those skiffs? He had to have said no, and yet he took them anyway. So he has to explain himself to whether it is obstruction or not.
Well, I think it's certainly true that what President Biden has said thus far to me makes no sense at all.
None.
That it just doesn't purport reality. You can't say these were just boxed up and nobody really knew about it. When they went to different locations, were moved repeatedly, and were clearly divided. So someone clearly removed some documents, including one that was reportedly found in his library. That indicates that they're being used for a purpose. And I do think that there's also elements that undermine obstruction, as you noted. Among other things, if you look at both Biden and Pence, the attorneys in those cases also said, yeah, we didn't find any more documents, and then more documents were found in both cases.
Yeah.
And so I think this is one of the reasons why at the end of the day, special counsels tend to, you know, prefer prosecution. They don't get dressed up for nothing. But it has to go to the attorney general. And Garland's going to have to make a decision with the special counsel whether justice is served by bringing a charge against Donald Trump. I think the answer currently on the evidence we know should be no, that it's not served unless there's more evidence where Trump is actually orchestrating an elaborate series of lies. But there's another problem here, by the way.
Go ahead.
This is the one that's most serious, but they need to prosecute him before he's reelected because they have a standard that you can't indict a sitting president. And if he is elected, he could self-pardon himself.
Another reason to run. The other thing, I just think what you're trying to do, because I'm the non-legal expert, I'm the audience. And if I'm reading, just keeping up with the news, and I hear about all these leaks about obstruction and my valet and the Secret Service and my lawyer interviewed, and the word is, according to the Washington Post, that Trump personally was seen looking through these documents at different times and he lied to his lawyer. So you're priming the pump to get the public ready to hear how different Trump's case is before you get word one about the Biden case, because they are not leaking at all. We have no idea about the thousands at University of Delaware. We have no idea about what else was found or what the contents were at the Penn Center or Rehoboth or anywhere else. But you know all these details, whether true or not, about Trump. So getting the public ready to say, look how different the two are. So they're actually priming the audience ahead of time, like showing up before the Knicks-Cavs series and go, listen, the Knicks, without Randle, they're not going to win. Just got to tell you, they're not going to win. So when they lose, you can see, I told you already. Do you like my analogy?
I did.
I probably don't know. I tell you what, I would not open up I would use my that I would not use your analogy if I was in your law school class, but I also would not say what AOC said. The Supreme Court not needed. So I would my opening statement would be I prefer my opening statement I just used over AOC's. If someone opened up in your class and said what AOC said, what would you say to them?
Well, you know, I've actually had a student in the class say once that he really didn't care about what the law says. This is how he'd like to have it come out. And I did remark to him, you know, that's the problem with going to law school. You have to learn the law. And, you know, that otherwise this is all an exercise in impressionistic art. You know, we either are bound by the law or you're really right in the wrong place.
And that was Michael Avenatti. Thank you. Thank you very much. Jonathan Turley.
All right,
it was great.
Thanks much.
All right. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Will you be taking part in the Easter egg rolls after planning on after 2024?
Well, I plan on at least three or four more Easter egg rolls.
At least three or four more?
Maybe five.
Maybe five.
maybe
so,
six.
So
what the hell?
Are you saying that you would be taking part in our upcoming election in 2024?
Well, I'll either be rolling an egg or, you know, being the good, you know, the guy who's pushing them out.
Come on, help a brother out. Make some news for me.
I plan on running now, but we're not prepared to announce it yet.
That's the President of the United States rolling hysterically with Al Roker about reelection, and he's not going to roll it out until September, October. That's what they say, and he's going to be using a lot of influencers to get the young vote, and he's going to let Republicans beat each other up. That's the word. So that's his plan. Tell me what you think of it. Eric, who's on WDBO in Orlando. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Brian. You and your last caller were right on spot with I like the quote from AOC, how the Supreme Court is not needed.
Yeah, overrated. But, we don't need it.
Nancy Pelosi said something even more appalling about Donald Trump, that justice shall prevail, and every American gets the right to trial to prove their innocence. They have to prove you're guilty. That's Nazi Germany and Stalinist Russia. You have to prove your innocence. What's your take on that?
I guess she didn't even walk it back, but she's the same woman that ripped up the State of the Union and got praise for it. No one says anything about the fact that her own district, San Francisco, has become a hellhole. And now she's serving, representing her district, and refuses to go on any committees because she has been speaker before. Represent your people. It's not about you. I have no respect for her. Really, I really don't. Don't tell me how much she accomplished. All she does is jam things down people's throats. Does never works across the aisle. Only if it's in our interest. Brian Kilmeade, Joe.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. 1-866-408-7669. Number to call to be on the show, and I definitely want you on the show. We know we got a big hour coming your way. Who do we have coming your way? Well, it's on the tip of my tongue. It's right here. Oh, yeah. Michael Goodwin is standing by, and Jeff Benedict's going to be here to talk about his brand new book on LeBron James. And also, he wrote a book on Tiger Woods. He also did The Dynasty. He's done a lot of things, and he's been on before because he also works for Sports Illustrated, an established sports writer, now an established biographer. This takes about 5 or 6 years to do. So also a special welcome to WWNR 620 AM in Beckley, West Virginia. We're going to be live there 9 to 12. We love the people of West Virginia. Love you, Governor, too, especially. So News Talk 620, 101.1 FM, WWNR. We appreciate welcome aboard. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three. Sponsored by Crunch Fitness. Interested in owning your own business in a growing $30 billion industry? Check out Crunch Fitness at crunch.com.
Number three.
Are you saying that you would be taking part in our upcoming election in 2024?
Well, I'll either be rolling an egg or, you know, being the guy who's pushing them out.
Come on, help a, help a brother out. Make some news for me.
I plan on running out, but we're not prepared to announce it yet.
All right. I don't know. He was trying to ad-lib his way through trouble, and it never works for him. Michael Goodwin is standing by to talk about that. All things politics in 2024. The big names are beginning to show their game plan, how Trump's legal issues motivate his base and repels independents, while Joe's invisible re-election campaign plans to use TikTok to make up for his lack of energy and enthusiasm.
Number two. I believe that the Biden administration should ignore this ruling, and what they are currently doing is engaged in an unprecedented and dramatic erosion of the legitimacy of the courts.
Here we go again. A ruling in Texas bans the abortion pill, and an opposing ruling in Washington state heads the Supreme Court and goes against it. So for pro-life Republicans, this represents pure political peril.
Number one.
The Chinese military exercises these couple of days have been very serious. Ships that come in very close to Taiwan, and any accident might spark an uncontrollable war in between Taiwan and China.
Joseph Wu, foreign minister. Spineless France, the latest country to not back Taiwan, and now the dollar as currency after a trip to China, who is conducting the most intense drills to date to intimidate us and the island nation. But where is our president going? Ireland. Unbelievable. We're going to look at the best course for the U.S. This is the worst foreign policy in my lifetime. Michael Goodwin joins us now at the New York Post. Michael, if you think about the Middle East, the Far East, Europe, have you ever seen a bigger, even Central America, Latin America, South America? Have you ever seen a least productive foreign policy at the most critical time?
Good morning, Brian. I think we'd all be hard-pressed to say that there have been other times. I think what you're seeing that's entirely new is a sense from all of our adversaries and our allies that America is weak. And therefore, everybody is acting accordingly. They're acting as if that's what they believe. And so you have France kind of charting its own way, which it often tends to do. But now it sees no advantage in following the American way. You see, of course, China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. All of the axis of evil, the new axis of evil, you see them making moves that they would not make were it not for their conclusion that America is weak. And so I think it is a universal phenomenon that is directly owing to Joe Biden's view of the world, his lack of any clarity, his lack of strength when it comes to our military. I think the handling of Afghanistan, the chaotic, deadly withdrawal, was the final proof for a lot of these autocracies.
Then now's the time. But here, Mike, I'm going to stop you there because it wasn't chaotic. They told us on Thursday, yes. not from his perch, it was not chaotic. And the only reason it came off like that is because Donald Trump left bad plans. I mean, they didn't see anything of Trump's that they wanted to keep. But that plan was too dug in to change.
Yeah, right. Brian, I encourage your listeners, if they have not read this document, go to the White House website and you will find it. It's only 12 pages.
Yep.
It reads as though it was written by a summer intern. It is the most ridiculous assertions. And you have this almost comic book kind of descriptions of Biden leading discussions in vigorous and inclusive ways as though he's just this master. They don't mention they mention on page 8 the 13 service members killed in that bombing. They mention nowhere the equipment left behind. They lie to omit that there was this disagreement among the military about how to do this. They have the military all agreeing. I mean, it is a shameless, shameless document. And as you say, it's all about Trump. Trump gets more blame than the Taliban.
I mean, that's how crazy this document is. And it's embarrassing, but it is so typical of the Biden administration. They do not accept any responsibility. Remember, Joe Biden has said he inherited the inflation problem?
I know.
Not true. I mean, gasoline prices were high when he took office. Not true. I mean, on and on and on. And I think it at some point, if you're paying attention, you realize this guy's a phony. He's a fraud.
He's ridiculous.
I think what they're counting on is Trump. Let's just keep banging the
and
Trump
abortion.
Drum. And you'll keep people's attention focused on Trump, and nothing unites the Democratic Party more than Donald Trump.
Here's Mike Gallagher, who's head of the China Committee, a select committee on China, and also a military veteran, Cut 41.
I'm almost speechless, Sean. I mean, that I don't know what universe Kirby is living in. I mean, it was the definition of chaos. It was dishonorable. It was shameful. It was humiliating. And Kirby, as a military officer, should know better. We're talking about 13 Americans dead who didn't need to die, Sean. Hundreds of Americans that we abandoned behind enemy lines. And for them to minimize this, for them to try and just dump this report on a Thursday night, hoping nobody would notice. And then if you read the contents of the report, it's quite literally insane, Sean. Trying to gaslight the American people. I cannot fathom just their willingness to do this.
And I can't give Admiral Kirby a pass because he's a military officer. He knows what a disaster this is, how they let everybody down. He's the 86th Airborne came in and they got a certain amount of people out. Okay, fine. They did their job at the very last minute, and the plan was awful. Let the Taliban be security, and we'll fly out anyone who wants to line up outside a barbed wire fence and then randomly let the Taliban decide who gets through. It was insane. And then we find out the State Department was out, did not want to leave without all their stuff. They would not work past dark because of processing people or not processing people. And they were drinking before they left, hanging out in the embassy, just drinking while our military guys are wondering when the next suicide bomber's coming.
Yeah, look, Brian, I think that's why I think this is such an important moment. As you say, they tried to sneak this thing under the radar. But I think when you read it, you see who they are. You see what the Biden administration is about, the shallowness of it, the kind of political overlay to everything. I mean, at the end of this document, they actually claim that it was a good thing and that what they've learned, they've used successfully in Ukraine and in parts of Africa. I mean, the whole thing reeks of some desperation to get Joe Biden off the hook. I mean, I don't know why they bothered, because I think this thing just makes them look worse. I don't know why they even didn't just run silent on this. There was no clamor that I'm aware of for yet another view of what happened in Afghanistan in the summer of 2021. So this is, to my mind, just an unforced error that they brought on themselves by reminding people of, A, how incompetent they are, but, B, how what they said about themselves and about Trump is just so far from reality that you have to question their integrity.
On a different note, I want to talk about Governor Gavin Newsom, who has destroyed California. More people leaving California than any other state in the union. We know about the crime issue. We know about the border issue. We know we also know the homeless through the roof. He's destroyed, but yet he's walking around like some success story, trying to go after Governor DeSantis while clearing the field for Trump. Listen to what he was saying. Cut 25.
Biden will be reelected.
And, you are on his advisory.
Deservedly so. Noah, masterclass. This is simple. You cannot, in modern times, I say this with respect at peril of some previous Democrats maybe being a little insulted by this, his legislative accomplishments the last 2.5 years, there's just nothing that comes close. And you're seeing the results all across this country already, which is just another reason that he not only deserves it, but I will be enthusiastically out there campaigning for him.
I mean, what country is he looking at?
Yeah, I mean, the motivation there, Brian, is I think what we have to look at. And I'm among those who doubts that Biden is going to run. I think it's a very tricky path forward. One of the decisions you have to make is, what about Kamala Harris? Is she going to be your running mate again? And so I think that Newsom is among the Democrats who's eager to run. And the best way to do that, as long as Biden says that he's going to, is be 100% supporter, you know, be kissing up to everything to make it look like you could just walk right in and inherit that machine of success. I see no other reason for falsifying the record that way, to say it's sort of incomparable with because of his legislative achievements. Really, you mean the ones that drove up inflation, or the ones that are maybe letting the transgender issue get out of control? I mean, what exactly has Joe Biden achieved that makes his presidency so successful? Certainly, the rest of the country doesn't see it.
So, listen, they fear DeSantis, no question. Listen to this, cut 26.
He's going to get rolled by Trump. Trump's just going to roll him, thumped. I honestly, if I were offering him political advice, I'd tell him to pack up and wait a few years and actually do some of the hard work, which actually includes governing, not just identity and culture war.
I mean, do you believe this guy? Does he have a mirror? The guy, he's sitting in another state, talking about a governor who's the most successful governor in the country, and he's the most unsuccessful, and he does not understand it.
You know, Brian, I think one of the things that scares me most about our country these days is the value system of the left. And so if you raise taxes, talk about climate change, hate Trump, those are virtues for Democratic voters. And sometimes I feel that that's all they care about. If you raise taxes, hate Trump, you know, sort of bleed for everything blue, you will get reelected. I mean, there are polls that show upwards of 80% of people think the Alvin Bragg indictment of Donald Trump is a good thing. They support it. Now, I guarantee you probably no more than a handful of those people read the actual indictment or care about the weaknesses of it or appreciate the historic event of indicting a former president and what that's going to signify going forward. But it doesn't matter. So this shared value system that kept America intact and kept it moving forward is breaking down before our eyes. And so someone like Gavin Newsom can sit in a news conference or with reporters and trash the governing skills of Ron DeSantis, who has made Florida the most popular state in America.
Right.
I mean, they're trying to get it. Unbelievable.
That's why they're attacking him.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm surprised they're not going to buy attack ads against DeSantis. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not even deciding. Let these guys fight it out themselves. But DeSantis is not doing much fighting back these days because he's not in yet. So we'll see how this goes.
Yes. Look, I think there is still a question mark as whether DeSantis is going to run. I mean, he hasn't declared. He doesn't have to. He can wait out the Florida legislative session. But nonetheless, I do think that Donald Trump has been helped in the party by this indictment and by the other criminal cases coming down the line. So I think it does complicate the path for DeSantis, because there is this pressure now to rally around Trump. And I understand that. I mean, what has happened to Donald Trump with this indictment and with the federal cases and the Georgia case, I think are real political prosecutions. And I think they do open the gate and they change the dynamics within the party. So I think DeSantis is wise at this point to wait and see how this settles a little bit longer.
All right. Just so you know, Ron DeSantis is $80 million of his reported $110 million war chest in a state political action committee. They also have this Never Back Down super PAC for him, which Ken Cuccinelli's in. It's got $30 million. But Trump has over the weekend got Cindy Hyde-Smith, Republican, Byron Donalds, Republican, Jim Banks, all decided they're going to support him for president. Interesting time. I love this stuff. So, and I know you do, too. Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate it,
Always
Michael
a
Goodwin.
Pleasure.
New York
Always
Post.
A pleasure, Brian. Thank
hey,
you.
Hey, I see the line's jammed. We'll try to get to as many as possible. Bottom of the hour, we talk a little LeBron. You're going to love this. Jeff Benedict is here for an extensive look at one of the most famous athletes in America.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The question with Donald Trump has been since 2016, is he too hot to handle? That's what Republicans faced in the 2018 midterm elections, the 2020 election, 2022 midterm election. Does his presence help Donald Trump, but does it hurt every other candidate down ballot?
That is what Ari Fleischer said to us on One Nation on Saturday night. I hope you were watching 8 and 11 o'clock Eastern time. And that's the question. You know, you look at he's out there and you got to wonder if Donald Trump gets the nomination. All right. Can he win the general? What could he do to win people over? And instead, maybe Joe Biden is proving such an inept president that the way that people want to switch from Donald Trump, maybe people just vote against Joe Biden if this is their only choice. Jonathan, listen in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Jonathan.
Here's the key. I went over half of it with you already on one of your other shows, which is to run Trump and DeSantis together. We won't debate that, but let's skip ahead to how they win the general. They win the general by, instead of focusing on the white patriot vote, which you already have on lockdown, you go around to every inner city, Milwaukee, Atlanta, all the inner cities, and you have roundtable discussion meetings with all the African-American leaders in those cities, maybe even take Candace Owen and Killer Mike with you, and you have roundtable discussions where you actually write up. You don't just do it for a face value. You write up legislation that will improve those inner city African American
lives. Or at least
lives.
Try, right, Jonathan? At least try. They're not trying now. A lot of them are frustrated because they feel as though the black community just does not want to be open to the Republican message. But I would be indefatigable in that effort. Jeff Benedict next.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I set out a goal 2 years when I came back to bring a championship to the city. I gave everything that I had. I poured my heart, my blood, my sweat, my tears to this game. And against all odds, I don't know why we want to take the hardest road. I don't know why the man above gives me the hardest road, but it's nothing the man above don't put you in situations that you can't handle. And I just kept that same positive attitude. Like, instead of saying, why me? They're saying, this is what he want me to do. And Cleveland, this is for you.
And that is LeBron James. Grew up in Akron, Ohio. He ends up being drafted by the Cavs, where he starred there. And then famously said he's taken his talents as a free agent to Miami, to the Heat. Got a lot of, they were burning his jersey in Cleveland. He goes and wins 2 championships there in Miami and then bounces back when he becomes a free agent, goes back to Cleveland, and there you see he just wins the championship, the first in Cleveland history, Cleveland sports history. That is not news to Jeff Benedict, whose new book, LeBron, is now out tomorrow, and he joins us now in studio. Jeff, great to see you again.
Good to see you, Brian.
You don't take on small topics and small projects. How long did this take you?
I started this 5 years ago, but I can't say it took me 5 years because after I started LeBron, I stopped at one point and did the dynasty with the Patriots.
Right.
So, I mean, in total, this was, you know, about 2 years.
And your Tiger Woods book, extremely successful too.
Right. Right.
Which was awesome. And the dynasty, you did get some cooperation with dynasty.
Yes.
Tiger had no cooperation.
Right.
He told people not to talk to you. But you said something interesting to me. He said, LeBron didn't talk to you,
right?
But he didn't stop anybody else from doing it, which is pretty special.
It is. I mean, and there's levels of cooperation or unauthorization or whatever. But I just think, as a general rule, when you're writing a biography about a living person, and that's the key thing. Most biographies are written about dead people, famous, accomplished people who have passed, presidents, world leaders, movie stars, whatever. But when you're doing one about someone who's alive and who in this case is still in their prime, you shouldn't expect cooperation in the form of, sure, I'll sit down and give you interviews. There's no reason to do that. And in fact, I think a lot of ways it's better when they don't. It gives you the ability to write as close to a true sort of unvarnished portrait as you can. And that's what I did with LeBron, and it's what Armin and I did with Tiger.
I know that I guess it was Walter Isaacson who did Steve Jobs.
Yes.
And while he was still alive.
Yes.
And he said, be as honest as possible. And he said, some of this stuff is pretty tough, brutal. And he kind of read it while he was still alive, knowing, I guess, he was terminal to a degree.
Yes.
That's an interesting faction, right?
And a different – and a completely different and very rare and unusual scenario where you have someone who knows they're about to die and they're at the end and you turn to a great biographer and say, you know, write it.
Right. So that's moment. Tell me about that moment that we just played.
Well, that moment for LeBron is, to me, when you're writing a story like this, here's the things you think about. Where do I start? Where do I bring the audience into this book? And I chose to bring them in the moment LeBron makes the decision to go to Miami, because it's like one of the hardest moments in his professional career.
He's in Connecticut. The Boys and Girls Club makes the announcement, and ESPN gives him an hour. Jim Gray's idea.
Yeah,
right?
Jim Gray's idea. I decide to open there. Then you got to think about, where do you end? Where's the story end? But also, what's the climax? What's the moment in the story that takes the reader to the pinnacle moment? And to me, that moment is when he finally delivers the championship to Cleveland. And here's the thing.
And he left after, and this time there was no anger.
There's no – exactly. And to me, the most – if you were going to make up a story, like a Hollywood script, this is the part that is the fiction, right, is the guy that actually leaves Miami, leaves Pat Riley, leaves a virtual all-star team where they were guaranteed, hardwired – to get more rings and more hardwire and keep winning championships. You walk away from all that to go back to play for the owner who said horrible things about you.
To a city that burned your jersey.
Yeah, to a city that burned your jersey, and to an owner who burned every bridge between you and Cleveland. You go back to that and you basically say, who am I to hold a grudge? I'm going home to deliver on a promise. And he gets one more ring in Cleveland. And one ring in Cleveland is – that championship's the biggest in 50 years.
And by the way, Kyrie Irving on that team, and he'd demand a trade right after. And I was like, what are you demanding a trade for? Little do we know that that player would be a head case in Boston, in Brooklyn, and now Dallas.
Well, and I think, too, you bring up Kyrie Irving. That's a great point, is that had Kyrie – this is the thing about revisionist history, right? If you look backward, here's one scenario. LeBron stays in Miami. If he stays in Miami, he probably catches Jordan and maybe even eclipses him just in championships. But he doesn't stay in Miami. He takes a harder path, which at the time, Riley's like, can't believe that he's doing that. But then you get to the Kyrie Irving thing after they win the championship in Cleveland. If Kyrie stayed in Cleveland with LeBron, he might have won more championships.
Yeah. The way it starts, before we get into his legacy and what he means, the way this book starts, I knew it was hard upbringing. I didn't know it was this hard. Dad never, still doesn't know who his dad is. His mom is 16 when she has him. She's 16 years old, and they can't make ends meet. She's got a grandmother, and he's got her mother, his mother's mother.
Yeah.
The grandmother dies right away, and then LeBron's grandmother dies. And they're moving every 3 months.
Yes.
They can't keep up.
Yes.
And it is perilous times for young LeBron James. He's scared a lot of the time.
Yeah, and that's why I did the – Brian, I was thinking a lot about architecture. How do you design this story? Because every biography is different and how you put it together. I knew I wanted the book to open in Greenwich, Connecticut, with LeBron stepping on the stage to – have that moment where he announces, I'm taking my talents to South Beach.
By the way, the richest per capita in the country.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of reasons that I decided to go there. But when you turn the page, you're suddenly thrown back to the hardscrabble streets of Akron, and when LeBron's a little boy and he's home alone at night in an apartment, and the sights and sounds and things that are around him are – it's scary. It's frightening. But the reason I wanted that hard turn is because – I think that to me, those early years for LeBron, that's the explanation. When you talk about origin stories, that's the explanation for the man that LeBron became and who he is today. It's rooted in Akron, and it's rooted in his mom.
So one guy, Kelker, is it?
Yeah.
Walks out and says, hey, guys, I need guys for my football team.
Yeah.
You guys want to play football? And LeBron says, yeah, just happen to be on. Yeah, I want to play. Because you ever played for it? He goes, no. And he knew in the back of his mind that his mom said, you can never join these leagues. I have no money. You're not got equipment. I have no car. Right. You never get there.
Right.
But this guy's like, I'll sign you up and I'll drive you. If that guy doesn't walk out and take an interest in that kid just hanging out and those kids just hanging out, who knows what'll happen? And it's football. It's not basketball.
It's not basketball.
First carry, 80-yard touchdown.
I know. And so the LeBron Pee-wee football stories were some of my favorite because just the way he gets sort of found. And then he meets Frankie Walker. And Frankie Walker becomes basically.
What's his nickname?
Frankie. Big Frankie?
Yeah. Big Frank, yeah.
So his arrival in LeBron's life is really pivotal moment because Frankie Walker and his wife offer to bring LeBron into their home and raise him.
Because they see how he was moving. They see how chaotic his life was.
And it's a big moment for Gloria to allow LeBron, her son, to go live with another mother and father for a year.
Is this a black family?
Yes. And it's LeBron's first time seeing how a family is supposed to
function.
He's got chores. He has to do chores in the morning. He has to take a bath before school. He has to do homework after. He has responsibilities. He's got to make a bed. And LeBron, that happens, you know, at a really pivotal moment, fourth and fifth grade. And to me, these stories, like, and then meeting Coach Drew, you know, it's like the next thing in line. And then when he meets Coach Drew and he's meeting these kids like Little Drew and Cheyenne Cotton, these are the guys that become his best friends and ultimately he's going to play high school ball with. But those early years, the between peewee football and youth basketball in Akron.
Right. So interesting, Jeff. Jeff Benedict, our guest, his book LeBron's out tomorrow. It's certainly be a bestseller. It's so interesting. When you have a kid that has all this stuff against him, why some kids get involved with the gangs and go awry, and this kid, LeBron, said, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to study, I'm going to come home on time, I'm going to do my work, I'm going to look at what's happening and do the reverse.
Yes.
Rather than look what's happening and say, I know no other way.
Yeah. No, I love that you brought that up because I think that that year when he moves in with the Walkers and it's fifth grade, he has like perfect attendance at school. His grades are exceptional. The teachers are looking at him going like, this kid has – He's doing well academically. He has interest in school. And for the first time, somebody, an adult figure, tells him, you could go to college. Meaning if you keep your grades up, you have this talent as an athlete, you could get a scholarship. LeBron had never been told that word scholarship before. No one had ever said to him, you could go to college. And it just shows you how an adult, an authority figure, can have a huge impact on a young, impressionable child.
And you should know, too, that when they see this kid in the playground, they don't think he's going to be a pro.
No.
They don't say, well, he can be undefeated. They just see a kid.
No, that's...
And you bring him to his house, they didn't say, because you're the best player on the team.
No,
no. It didn't happen like that.
Yeah, and Frankie Walker, you know, famously tells LeBron, basically, we did this for you not because you're a great athlete. We did this because we love you.
Right.
I mean, there's these moments like that in the early years of LeBron's life. That
did they talk to you?
I talked to a whole bunch of different people, and a lot of them just said, please don't say that I talked to you. So I'm going to stay away from did I talk to him or not. But what I will say is this. When you have adults in that environment using the word love and you're not used to hearing that word, it actually – you're impressionable enough as a youth, you can say that word. And there gets a point in high school where LeBron is telling Maverick Carter that he loves him when he's a freshman talking to a senior. And then his senior friend on the basketball team, Maverick Carter, says, I love you too. He's like, these were kids.
And they're still together today.
They're still together today.
And he's one of the most successful businessmen.
Yeah.
He's never led him astray.
No, and that's because this really is love. I mean, you don't usually hear words like that when you're talking about.
So it's so interesting too in the portion. I haven't gotten through all of it, obviously, because the book is how many pages?
500.
But one thing is interesting is that when the coach walked up to him and said, by the way, if you want people to want to play with you, pass them the ball. Everybody's going to play with you. And he always wanted friends.
Yes.
And so he goes, I started studying Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm like, wow, okay. He became this great distributor of the ball. Why? He wanted friends.
Yeah. If you pass the ball, kids will want to play with you. And so I titled that chapter, If You Pass the Ball, because LeBron was taught that way before high school. He was a kid when his coach taught him that.
When we come back, why LeBron, in my opinion, is not nearly as loved as a Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson is today, a Tom Brady, and why you think that is, and what do you think? Sometimes that stuff changes. Remember, they hated Ali for a while, and now he ended up one of the most beloved athletes ever. Back in a moment with Jeff Benedict. His book, LeBron's, out tomorrow.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
He doesn't understand the power that he has for being the leader of this beautiful country. He doesn't understand how many kids, no matter the race, look up to the President of the United States for guidance, for leadership, for words of encouragement. That's what makes me more sick than anything, that being the President of the United States is the most powerful position in the world. And we are at a time where the most powerful position in the world has an opportunity to bring us closer together as a people, inspire the youth, and put the youth at ease on saying that it is okay for me to walk down the street and not be judged because of the color of my skin or because of my race. But he doesn't care.
Well, that's with his opinion, but that's LeBron James talking about President Trump. He's right. I love to hear you say beautiful country, because the perception of LeBron James, doesn't really like it too much. But the guy who did all the work is Jeff Benedict. He just has LeBron. It's a great biography, and it's out tomorrow, so don't blame yourself if you haven't read it yet, but certainly be a bestseller. What about what LeBron said weighing in with Trump? That seems to have polarized many people to think, okay, he's taking a stand politically, so therefore you that's a risk.
It's definitely a risk. There's no question. And I think that the reason that LeBron is as respected as he is, but also that he also has people who criticize him so much, is because he did take that risk. And most athletes who are anywhere near the level of success that LeBron has experienced steer as far away from politics as they can. There's a formula for avoiding that kind of controversy. And just and music bands are the same way, because their idea is, we need to fill the stadiums. We don't want to alienate half the country. So you don't say stuff. I think in LeBron, in the first half of his career, he didn't say things. He didn't take a stand. He avoided that. But there comes a time by 2008, by the end of 2008, that starts to slowly change with the election of Barack Obama. It's the first time that LeBron got anywhere involved in politics.
And you said Jay-Z pushed him to do it?
I wouldn't say Jay-Z pushed him to do it, but he encouraged him to do it, because when Jay-Z found out that Barack Obama was not only running, but that he had a legitimate chance of winning, he got behind his campaign and agreed to do some benefit concerts to raise money and awareness. And he encouraged LeBron to participate in one of those concerts in Cleveland, and LeBron did it.
I think it was more the critics of, and Donald Trump's got a lot of critics, but
yes,
the vicious criticism he had of Trump, and then Trump went back at him like he always does. But it was the support of Obama, I don't think, was that big of a deal.
No, it wasn't controversial.
It
was not. That's a good point. It was not controversial. I'm just saying that's a moment in time where LeBron stepped out and started what has become. Now he's very politically active. But that back then, in 2008, that was the beginning.
So let's talk about China. You said at first, when he's there playing in the Beijing Olympics,
yes,
that everybody wanted him to come out and condemn China's human rights record.
Yes, he was under tremendous pressure, like Steven Spielberg and a couple of other. Steven Spielberg was involved in those Olympics initially, designing like the music and the show and in the Olympics. He got pressured and eventually withdrew. LeBron was under the same kind of pressure to speak out. He did not do it. Kobe did not do it. And he was criticized wildly for not speaking out.
But that's different when the GM of the Houston Rockets at the time, now GM of the 76ers, came out and went for Hong Kong.
Yes.
He was saying basically how stupid he was to do that, because you're jeopardizing the deals we have in China. And go, really? You're very critical of the U.S. in the human rights, but what about China?
I think you're talking about now a time that's
forward.
Way later. Like, I want to say that was more than a decade after LeBron was criticized for what he didn't say about China. And I think what's really fascinating, when you're a biographer, you get the ability to step way back and look at the whole thing. And a person's life. And I think what's happened with LeBron is the sophistication and the complexity of becoming and then being arguably the most powerful athlete in America. He supplanted Tiger. Tiger used to be that guy. LeBron became that guy. By 2010, he is that guy. And he has been that guy ever since. And when you become that guy, you're the biggest athlete at Nike. If LeBron says something, it's news. And I think him understanding that and the complexity of that was different in 2018 than it was in 2007.
Hey, it's a very complex character. He overcame so much to be maybe the best to ever play. We'll see what the next chapter is at 38. Thanks so much, Jeff Benedict.
Thank you, Brian.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. 1-866-408-7669. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where even though it's only two blocks away, I have not taken the new Grand Central train entrance, which I find surprising for myself. I walked to 34th Street. How does that make any sense?
You're a man of habit.
Maybe that's it. Hey, special thanks to WWNR 620 AM in Beckley, West Virginia. You're now carrying the show. We appreciate it. News Talk 720 on 101.1 FM, WWNR. We truly appreciate you being with us, and we know how many Fox fans are there. I know you're going to love the show. In a matter of moments, Ambassador Kurt Volker. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Are you saying that you would be taking part in our upcoming election in 2024?
Well, I'll either be rolling an egg or, you know, being the guy who's pushing them out.
Come on, help a brother out. Make some news for me.
I plan on running now, but we're not prepared to announce it yet.
All things politics in 2024. Big names are beginning to show their game plan, how Trump's legal problems motivate his base and repel independents, while Joe's invisible reelection campaign plans to use TikTok to make up for his lack of energy enthusiasm.
Number two.
I believe that the Biden administration should ignore this ruling, and what they are currently doing is engaged in an unprecedented and dramatic erosion of the legitimacy of the courts.
Here we go again. A ruling in Texas bans the abortion pill. An opposing ruling in Washington affirms it. It's up to the Supreme Court now. For pro-life Republicans, this represents a pure political peril.
Number one.
The Chinese military exercises this couple of days have been very serious. Ships that coming very close to Taiwan. And any accident might spark an uncontrollable war in between Taiwan and China.
Yeah, this is not good. The exercises China is doing, out of control, maybe the most intense ever. It also includes an animation which shows what missile strikes will look like on Taiwan. Spineless France, the latest country to not back Taiwan. They want to stay neutral and also are open to leaving the dollar. Unbelievable. That when Europe's threatened, we step up to help France and other countries. They don't see the peril of backing China while they bring their business to increase ties. I just wonder when Macron, they're trying to duck his own problems at home because he has a nation on strike. But he should get a lot of blowback for that. He should get it from Japan. He should get it from South Korea. He should get it from Vietnam. He should get it from Australia, everywhere, including our loyalists like in the UK, if they're still out there. Joining me now is Kurt Volker. As you know, Kurt is a former U.S. ambassador to NATO, former United States special representative for Ukraine negotiations, and distinguished fellow at the Center for European Policy Analysis. Ambassador, welcome back.
Hey, thanks very much, Brian. Great to be with you.
Ambassador, from what you could tell, what do you think the damage is from what seems to be legitimate leaks from our Pentagon about private conversations and intelligence that have leaked out that shows how great our communication is and our sources are within Russia? Israel, views on Israel. This looks like Edward Snowden revisited 10 years later.
Yeah, or Julian Assange, you know, and all the WikiLeaks stuff.
Yeah.
It's just as bad as that. And as you were saying, it reveals a lot, not just about the information itself, but about how we collect it, what we have. And that runs a risk then to both people, human sources, and also technical means that can get shut down if people see how we are actually collecting intelligence. So it is very damaging.
It is damaging, and it also shows, too, that you guys evidently are communicating the lack of ammo and the speed in which you're getting the support you need, like the tanks.
Yes, absolutely. And we've known this. A lot of the stuff is not new, but now it's actually documented in a very serious way and into showing what the Pentagon is actually thinking. And let's remember, the Pentagon has gotten a lot of things wrong as well, too. They thought the Ukrainians would lose in 3 days when this war started. So it doesn't mean that they're right, but it does reflect the thinking there. And it does shine a light on the war in a way that may give the Ukrainians a little bit less confidence about our support.
Yeah, and believe it, the leak started in January, started leaking to places like Telegram and others. So they include stuff on Ukraine, South Korea, Israel. On Wednesday, Telegram became, it seemed to be clear that Russia is now doctoring the intelligence to make it look like things are better than they are. But clearly, their ineptness is chronicled in also this communique that maybe you're privy to, but the general public isn't. They are really inept fighting force. They're ill-armed and ill-trained. And this is going to be a key surge in the spring, which now is further telegraphed by the intelligence leaked. How close is Ukraine to move forward with an offensive?
Well, I still think they're a few weeks away. Partly it's weather driven. They got to have warmer weather and the soil to dry out a little bit so it's not too muddy for the tracked vehicles. They also got to make sure that they've got the equipment in place. We've been slow in some of the deliveries of ammunition, in tanks. The Europeans slow on some of their tanks. They're getting aircraft as well. So I think we're still looking several weeks from now. But that being said, I think they are getting the stuff in place, and I do think this is going to be a very powerful counteroffensive.
So this story came out today that Vladimir Putin is preparing for an invasion of Crimea. Beaches are now covered with trenches and tank traps to repel an amphibious landing as Zelensky prepares a spring offensive. I mean, for Ukraine to get to the Crimea would show a collapse of the Russian army. This is more than a worst-case scenario. It sounds like they're preparing as if it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that this is a little bit of make-work on the part of the Russian military. I think the prospects for an amphibious landing against Crimea are pretty low because the Ukrainians don't have that.
Don't have a navy.
Yeah, they don't have that. So I think this is the Russians trying to make their own soldiers feel good about putting up defenses. I think a more likely scenario is you're going to see the Russians isolated in Crimea, that the Ukrainians will try to cut them off in a few key places, the Kerch Strait Bridge, a landline of communication that connects Russia to Crimea, and then that naval base at Sevastopol where the ships come in and out. I think the Ukrainians are going to go for those nodes and isolate the forces there rather than actually try a frontal assault.
What is the latest with the arms being supplied by Iran as well as China? What can you guys say for sure, or what is rumored?
Well, definitely Iran is participating with Russia. They're providing armed drones, kamikaze drones, that can fly into Ukraine, trying to knock out cities, civilian infrastructure, and so forth. So Iran is fully participating there. The Chinese are a bit different. The Chinese are basically saying to Russia, you got to start ending this war. It's not going well for you. You're not going to win this. We don't like what it's doing in the world, and we don't want to be painted with the brush that you're being painted with as war crimes and an aggressor, because they want their designs on Taiwan to be seen as somewhat legitimate, as he kind of picked up from Macron. So I think the Chinese are not directly helping Russia very much.
What is your sense of the rest of Europe? I mean, we keep getting stories that are disconcerting. For example, you know, is Germany actually still on board to supply the tanks necessary? We know Poland's committed, but we see that France is already waffling on the need to stay united with Europe. What's happening?
Yeah, I think that especially France, but Germany as well, they keep thinking about Putin and Russia. It's a big country. They're in Europe. We have to live with them as a neighbor. So we got to get to a point of negotiations. We've got to bring an end to the war, ignoring the fact that Putin has no intention of negotiating unless it's a complete surrender by Ukraine, which is not going to happen. So they keep looking for that way to, you know, push Ukraine into some kind of peace talks. I also think that Macron is concerned about his domestic political standing. Remember, they had those huge protests in Paris just a couple of weeks ago over raising the retirement age. So he's trying to put himself out there as another Charles de Gaulle type figure, someone who is pushing French independence, strategic independence, including separate from the United States. So that's partly what he's doing. That's not motivating the Germans as much, but I think the Germans are partly they never invested enough in defense to begin with, so they don't have that much to give the Ukrainians. And partly they want to make sure that they are looking out for a future relationship with Russia.
Kurt Volker, our guest. Kurt, a couple of things. Why, and this is because I'm not there and I don't know the politics. Why would it be to his advantage to act like a impartial observer in Taiwan? Why is it? I know they have problems with Americans sometimes with what we do, but they have to know they're better off with us than China. Why would he benefit from saying, well, I don't want to get involved and, you know, I don't want to be get on the same rhythm as America, is the exact quote, and I don't want to overreact like China. Why does that work?
I think it has to do with business. I think the French want to be doing business with China, buying and selling. They don't want to be in a confrontational posture toward China. And that's what standing up for Taiwan would do. So I think he deliberately wanted to avoid that and show some independence from the U.S. to keep that business relationship with China going.
How much damage was done, and maybe it's none, from the nuclear sub deal that was taken out from under them by the Biden administration as they cut a deal with the Australians?
Well, that's a case of the right thing done poorly. I think that we are providing the Australians now better submarines, quieter nuclear-powered submarines at a more reasonable cost for what they're getting as compared to what the French were going to do. The problem is that we blindsided the French on this, and we didn't talk with them about a way that they might even be able to participate in helping with a better submarine deal. We just blindsided them completely. So that did a lot of damage in the U.S.-French relationship.
And when you look at
early on,
yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, early on in the Biden administration, you had a very concerted effort by the French to try to rebuild ties with Biden and the U.S. after the Trump administration. And they, you know, they even sent a copy of the Statue of Liberty that they put up in front of the French ambassador's residence here in Washington. So they were making an effort, and then to get blindsided the way they did, it did really irritate them.
I'm heartened by the fact that you have Democrats and Republicans who see the danger of China, everything economically, what they're doing in Latin America, what they're doing with Brazil, China, what they're doing in the Middle East with Saudi Arabia, with Iran, of course. And now we see in Europe and Russia has never been tighter with China as it is right now. And we see the push off the dollar. Do you believe that we have a strategy to push back? Because this threat is pretty comprehensive.
No, I don't think that we do have a strategy at the moment. I think we're just hoping that people are slow to change. But I think we do need a more concerted strategy of reinforcing a Western-led transatlantic, if you will, but transatlantic plus Japan and Korea and Australia and others, but a Western-led economic order. Because China is very determined about replacing the United States, but we have the biggest economies in the world still outside of China. And we should be the ones that are setting the framework.
What happened? It beats me. You need someone who's innovative, is going to have China chasing us. Ambassador Kurt Volker, thanks so much.
Brian, great to be with you. Thank you.
All right, you got it. 1-866-408-7669. We come back. I'm going to take your calls. And then I'm going to take your calls for until about 45. I'll have two blocks to do that. Also, if you want to write me, BrianKilmeade.com, just click on comments. I'll be able to get to them. And number two, just a quick note, I'll be on Outnumbered at the top of the hour on television. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's The Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
See, this is exactly what leadership looks like. Unlike Republicans, President Biden actually supports democracy. And he's not going to just sit by and watch Republicans do these crazy radical things like expelling Democrats for supporting gun control. Thank you to President Biden and these representatives for standing up for democracy and standing up for America.
That is an example of a TikTok influencer that Joe Biden's going to be leaning on. Yep, TikTok, the app that even Senator Warner, most Democrats reveal, is a spying device ultimately for the Chinese. So not only is the president not going to ban it, he used it in 2022, he used it in 2020. So did Barack Obama. So did all these other leaders You know, with guys with nose rings and purple hair who explain to you they want to be cool, and whether it's St. Patrick's Day or a transgender aspiring basketball player or swimmer, they are going with to get the 18 to 28 voter. That's what they're going to do. And that's what they're going to do with Joe Biden. When he announces for re-election, we assume he's going to, it's going to be in the fall. They're going to swamp. They're going to swamp the zone with TikTokers and influencers. And why would they do that? Because they think that'll deliver the younger vote. And this is how strong they feel about it. They are going to set up an office, it looks like, in the White House for this digital campaign. An army of influencers. And that was Harry Sissons, a 20-year-old NYU college student. And he was explaining, and there was a still behind him of what was happening in Nashville with the legislature. So this is what he's going to do. That's going to be his thing, because Joe Biden can't campaign. He can't get a big crowd. He can't inspire. He really can't influence himself. So what do you do when the guy you might be running against, or whoever it is, whether it's DeSantis or Nikki Haley or Donald Trump, is getting big crowds and a lot of enthusiasm, who's very critical of you? You get influencers to try to get naive college students who don't even know what a conservative thought is, because they're not getting it on campus. That's in my view. So they looked at that terrible case that Alvin Bragg put on. And we all saw how bad it was and how it never should have led to an indictment of the former president. But ABC did a poll of independents, and this is scary for the Trump people. About 560 people, scientific poll, we assume. And they said, before the indictment, how did you view the necessity for the president to be indicted? 40% said he should be charged. After the arrest, 54%. 54%. They saw that weak case. And now 14 point more say he should be arrested. Now, should the president, former president, suspend his campaign? 41% before they saw an indictment, 52% after. For Republicans, pure Republicans, when asked, before the indictment, 16% said it was a justified indictment. After the indictment was read and revealed, 14%. If you want an example of a polarized country, divided country, there it is. What did Donald Trump gain from the indictment? Some endorsements. Cindy Hyde-Smith, the Republican out of Mississippi, has endorsed him. Congressman Byron Donaldson, up-and-coming superstar in Florida, has endorsed him. Jim Banks, who wants to be, I believe, governor of Indiana, has endorsed him. So he's running for the U.S. Senate next time. So they are jumped on. Now, DeSantis has not declared yet, but his super PAC is doing exceedingly well. He's got $80 million of his $110 million war chest on a state political action committee, which can be transferred. DeSantis' big donors had it punctuated by the former Trump official Ken Cuccinelli. He used to work for Trump. Now he's for DeSantis. He formed a super PAC called Never Back Down. They have $30 million. Trump got about $10 million after the indictment, but he could be looking at a few more. He's beginning to dominate the scene. But the question is, if it's Republicans against Republicans, what is the president looking for? What is the former president going to do except for insult Ron DeSantis? Is he going to pivot and try to get independent, soften his tone, talk about the different direction he wants to take the country, talk about what he learned the first time and how he'll be better this time? From North Carolina to Dayton, Ohio to Jacksonville, we'll be going everywhere when we come back. 1-866-408-7669. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Investigators now suspect, based on witness statements, security camera footage, and other documentary evidence, that boxes including classified material removed from a Mar-a-Lago storage area after the subpoena was served, and that Trump personally examined at least some of those boxes. What What's your client's response to this assertion?
Yeah, well, then it's nonsense. I mean, look, there's been a campaign of leaks from DOJ unlike anything I've ever seen. I was a prosecutor for 27 years. I spent 17 at this Department of Justice. I don't recognize it anymore. They are consistently leaking. The angle they're pushing on the obstruction is to try to create some sort of daylight between Joe Biden's possession of documents and President Trump's. And it's not going to work. I mean, they have literally put in everybody to grand jury you could imagine. They don't respect any privilege that President Trump holds. And it's desperately trying to find an obstruction angle that just isn't there.
James Trussi did a fantastic job yesterday going to bat for the president's bunch of cases. Obviously, the Alvin Bragg case is a joke. Now, they say the documents case is going to get the president. Well, really? James Trussi made it seem pretty clear that this is all about leaking things that may or may not be true. But this guy, James Smith, going after his attorney, making him testify against his client, President Trump, then getting the Secret Service and valet to testify against Trump. Can we please tell me who at the Penn Center has been interviewed about the 26 classified documents there? Can you please tell me who's been interviewed about the top secret documents found in his garage? Can you please tell me about the 27 or the 1,700 boxes taken out of the University of Delaware? Did they find classified information in that? So they're trying to, what he's trying to say is it's a tactic. When they do announce an indictment, they want to say, well, I can't indict the president because it's so much different than the previous president, because the previous president had obstruction because of what we saw in the Washington Post. What James Trussi's saying is not true. And keep in mind, the day they came over, they left with 15 or 17 boxes, and then they negotiated the other stuff. And that's when the FBI was told by the Department of Justice, go raid the place. Let's go out to Dean, listening on WABC in New Jersey. Hey, Dean.
Yeah, hi. You know, I'm thinking that we now have to do ballot harvesting because we have to keep up with the Democrats, and we have to make it election week.
Absolutely.
Or election month instead of making it election day.
You don't have a choice. In some states, you don't have a choice.
And now we have to go on TikTok because it's going to be in the Oval Office like the Democrats are doing. We have to weaponize the FBI like the Democrats. Why don't we come up with something that the Republicans thought of on their own so we're not playing catch up all the time?
That would be good, Dean. That would be good. But you also want to do legal. I don't want to do illegal. So I do think that if someone says in your state you can ballot harvest, you can protest, and then you say, okay, how many elections are you going to lose before you do the same thing? And then what you do is you try to get a legislature in there that'll tighten everything up. Like they ended up tightening it up in Georgia and in Florida. They didn't in Arizona, and I can't get my head around why they didn't. Mark, listen, WHIO in Dayton, Ohio. Mark.
Hey, Brian. For the Republicans to win a general election, they have three huge obstacles to overcome. Number one is Donald Trump. He will not get reelected. The women absolutely hate the man. They despise him. Number two, abortion. That argument has been lost, and women in the Midwest, they will vote for abortion all day long. And the Republicans, they just keep burying their head in the sand. And the third one, and I'm a Second Amendment guy, Brian, but every one of these mass shootings in these schools are carried out with AR-15s, and Republicans do absolutely nothing. I mean nothing. And you know what women talk about? They don't talk about Hillary Clinton not getting prosecuted. They don't talk about election laws. They don't talk about any of that stuff. They talk about what are we going to do to stop our kids getting shot in the schools with AR-15.
So, Mark, number one, I wouldn't be surprised. Are you in politics at all, or you're just astute?
Huh?
Are you in politics for a living, or are you just an astute observer?
I am on a city council, correct.
Sounds like it. Okay. I agree with you on a lot of things. The abortion thing is fascinating because that's all we heard about really since grade school. We've got to overturn Roe v. Wade. We've got to overturn Roe v. Wade. Then it happens, and they had no messaging on it. And Chris Christie brought it up yesterday. He says, listen, the messaging is this. Let the states decide. However, that's going to also – if 8 out of every 10 people want an option, want to be pro-choice, whether you're pro-life or not, but just want limits – on when you could do it. So 8 months, does anyone think an 8-month abortion is not murder? 9 months, of course it's murder. But if you go 15 weeks, that's more in line of Europe. That's what Lindsey Graham was saying. Return it to the states, agree on the 15 weeks. Ron DeSantis might be getting himself in trouble now. And I say this, for everybody who's pro-life out there that Governor DeSantis is, like Governor Christie is, you also have to look who's votes for me. And if they change if the legislature changes it to 6 weeks, DeSantis might lose a lot of support in the national election. But the one thing I would say about school shooting, they just did gun reform. They looked at all these others. They just did 6 or 7 points from red flag laws on down. They're never going to ban guns. They got to enhance the background check. I'm for that. Anybody who doesn't want to do a good background check, you know those people who want great background checks? Gun shop owners. They don't want to sell to the next murderer. So give them the ability to find out who that is. Empower the psychiatrist red flag laws to try to stop the next murderer before they get a gun. I mean, who wouldn't have wanted to ban that transsexual Audrey killer in Nashville before they got a gun? Who would want to sell that person a gun? Everybody knew she was dangerous, but they still got a gun. So it's not like Republicans aren't doing anything. A lot of them are upset that Cornyn and company and Cassidy signed off on it. I was one that wasn't. But bulk up the schools. That also gets women. Number two is, unless Donald Trump shows another speed, I agree with you on the soccer moms of the world. I agree with you. He's got his hardcore 30%. He's got his hardcore 80% of Republican Party. But that will not win you an election. Show me another speed. One of the things that could happen is Joe Biden is so bad, is so inept, the same voters that said, I like Trump's policy, but I don't like Trump, they'll go back to Trump. But Trump has got to show some discipline. And I'm not seeing a lot of it. I'm not seeing a lot of it. Matt, listen on WTKF in North Carolina. Hey, Matt. Hey, Matt, you're on. Steve, WOKV in Jacksonville. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Brian. Just to cover one of your past topics about the current war that this failing administration continues to perpetuate.
Ukraine.
Yes, sir. To be fair, is it fair to assume that America or our government in America, past and present, maybe perpetuating these type of wars to simply see their strategy so that we can defend ourselves down the line? I mean, is it fair to even ask that question?
I'm not sure your question. You're saying that we kind of perpetuate these wars for what? For the defense industry?
Well, so that we're seeing what their defense and their attack strategies are.
Oh, interesting.
So that we can defend ourselves better against those possible enemies down the line.
Well, Steve, a couple of things. You're smart in that we are getting so much intelligence by watching what the Russians are doing and seeing how inept they are in certain ways and where they are, their strengths are. The other thing we're seeing is what weapons work and what don't work. Obviously, Javelin's big success, HIMARS an overwhelming success. What guns are working? You know, what about the training? What has been effective training? You know, for the European theater, what are the Russians going to look to do if they have another ground war when it started? So I think you're 100% right by that. The fact is the Russians can't command the air. That tells you a lot about what they're doing. Now, you know who's also studying it? China. China's seeing, okay, this is the U.S. has got this. The U.S. has got that. That's pretty good. Wow, they have this on air defense. This does work on air defense. You know, these harpoons are pretty effective. The javelins are unbelievable. How do we stop that? So they're going to school on it. But by no means do I think for a second that we're starting a war in order to see how our weapons work. Kimberly, listening in South Florida. Kimberly.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I wanted to disagree as a woman with the last caller that you had regarding Trump. I just see really more strength for Trump now than even in his presidency. The fact that he is fighting back, I don't think there's ever been another Republican who has fought as hard as Trump. And I think, you know, as number one, that's what we want to see. We want to see someone who really can fight for our country. And, you know, we all knew, I mean, when we voted for Trump, that he was an outsider. He wasn't your cookie cutter politician. And, you know, I want someone who's going to shoot straight. And as far as the woman's abortion issue, you know, I'm past having a child. I'm 49. But You know, I there was actually a time where I was in support of women's right to choose, and I still feel that way. But I also feel very strongly that, you know, abortion is not birth control. And I think the Republicans' message needs to be a lot stronger on
a much stronger pro-life message.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Well, now they just don't want to talk about it.
No, we have a congresswoman in South Florida that actually brought to the floor a bill, and it had to do with the late-term abortion. There was a doctor actually performing late-term abortions where the babies were still alive. It was devastating. But, of course, it got no coverage and no news.
We'll see, Kimberly. I know what you mean, but right now it skews overwhelmingly. 8 of 10 under 35, 8 of 10 are pro-choice. Here's what Ari Fleischer said about what you were talking about Trump's tone. Cut 33. This is what he said to me on One Nation.
About half the voters focus on issues. They care about the economy. They care about foreign policy. They are ideological voters. They're issue-oriented voters. Another half of the voters vote on the basis of the person, the person's character. Many people love Donald Trump because they think he's the only one who will fight for them. Many people hate Donald Trump because they think that he is too hot to handle, that he is just a bad person, bad character to be in the Oval Office. American elections, Brian, have always been a mix of those two, issues and personality.
Isler was so insightful him to say that because, you know, and the thing about Ari Fleischer, never got caught up in the anti-Trump stuff. Doesn't say everything that Trump does is right. That's why he's so valuable at this time. There are certain people who will never say Donald Trump did everything wrong. And he makes so many those mistakes. He does so many extraordinary things, but he has so many mistakes where it makes you shake your head and does he want to win? But that's why Ari Fleischer is so valuable. He says, listen, I'll just give you an analysis. It's where the Republican Party is. But where's the rest of the country? Where are the independents? You know, where are the undecideds? How do you win them over? And a lot of people look at DeSantis and say, okay, he's got the same policies. He's got the Harvard, he's got the Yale. He understands what it's like to run a state. He's got the military background, knows what it's like to go into war. And he's younger, and he's much more disciplined. And they think that might be the answer. And others say, not learning on the job. Watch Ben Outnumbered.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It is foretold, though I have committed no crime, I will be arrested, tried, and found guilty.
Sound familiar? Hey, thank you so much. A famous, wonderful man arrested for no reason at all. If you haven't put it together, folks, I'm comparing myself to Jesus again. And what better time than on his birthday, Easter? As we speak, I am being persecuted on a level the likes of which the world has never seen. Even worse than the late, great Jesus. You know, many people are saying we're very similar. We're both very tall. Very popular, and both, frankly, white Americans. You know, Jesus did some incredible things. Some would call them miracles in terms of fish and with regard to bread. A lot of fish and bread. He rose from the dead on the third day. I would have done it faster, possibly 2 days. Possibly 2 days. I think we could have done it a lot faster. He had a good mind for business, water into wine, pure profit. And he had big, big rallies just like me. And a lot of his followers got in big, big trouble just like mine. All because I told them exactly what Jesus would have said. Get very violent and start a war.
So great. I very rarely say that about SNL. That cold open was just awesome. Right, Allison? I mean,
it was fantastic.
Right. I mean, it's funny. It's just I don't care. Like, I don't care if you voted for him or not. It's funny. And you should just go watch it. I'm sure it's online. It makes me wonder if I need to know more.
More to know.
All right, let's talk a little golf. John Rahm, Rahm wins the Masters, and he did it by playing well, but Brooks Koepka was awful. Shot a 75. Good. Not the way you win a tournament, but he won for three, and he was leading for 3.5 days. Excuse me, shot a 73. So we'll see what happens. The LIV guys. Phil Mickelson did well. Koepka tied in second with him. So we'll see where this goes. The rivalry between them continues. Phil Mickelson ended up shooting a 65 7 under, finished at 8 under, moving up 18 spots on the leaderboard at 52 years old, the best a 50-plus year old has ever done. Next, Jason Day reveals why Tiger Woods jumped out. He's in a lot of pain. He made the cut 23rd straight time, but the 15-time major winner re-aggravated something with his foot, plantar fasciitis, whatever.
Fasciitis.
And but he also said this, said to golf.com, he says, I was talking to him about the end of last year when he was saying the reason why he pulled out of the PGA was a screw went through his skin on Saturday or whatever it was. I don't know how bad it is. It just sucks that he's not here playing. You like to wonder what he could do at 48 if he didn't have that accident, but you wonder how much longer he is going to be playing. Next. Most people, this is a study, most people would rather spend money on their pet than their partner. An online poll conducted by Synchrony said Gen Z is more likely than any other generation to invest and save money on their pet. That according to 2,000 pet owners. That shows only 15% of Gen Z would rather buy an expensive concert ticket, go on vacation, 30% would save cash, whereas 42% would prefer to save money for an unexpected pet expense. That's crazy.
It is a little crazy, especially since, I don't know, I feel like most animals like love playing with things that aren't even like animal like toys, right? They just like a stuffed animal that you don't buy them, or they like to chew your
right.
shoe.
Well, they need a new knee or a hip.
Like yours. Or they can't hear.
Right, like mine.
Yes.
Next, best male country music singers, top five. Here they are. This according to a study. We don't know what study it is. Number five is Kenny Chesney. Number four is Tim McGraw with 80 million records sold. Number three is Alan Jackson, 50 million sold, two Grammys. Number two is Garth Brooks, 170 million. And number one is George Strait. I feel like these are older people that took this survey. Because people that look at new country aren't George Strait, Alan Jackson guys.
Well, they said according to music experts. So, yeah, probably if you're an expert, you've been around longer to study the industry overall.
All right. Now, I know this one you probably won't participate in, but I love this. We don't have time. But best boxing matches of all time, top five. Sugar Ray Leonard against Tommy Smith and Hearns is number five. That was awesome. Ali Frazier, three. I might move that up more. Ali Foreman, three, yep, because of the impact of it, but not the fight itself. Hagler Hearns, awesome. The number one fight ever, Ali Frazier won. Nice.
Download Fox News Channel's The 5 podcast for free. Five of your favorite Fox News personalities discuss current issues in a roundtable discussion. Get it now on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.